Welcome to the Aquariumax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 77, recorded August 29th, 2011.
Well, I greet all of you aquariophiles out there within the sound of our podcasted voices.
Yes, indeed. And we have a winner.
Yes, our first Daphnia winner is
Phil from Minnesota.
Yes, congratulations,
Phil.
Come
on down.
He is a long-time listener, but a first-time contributor. And he has several comments, actually, not all of them related to Daphnia, but we'll get started on those now. The first one, we talked about identifying plants that really don't belong in an aquarium, terrestrial plants and things of that nature. We talked about that last episode, and he had a great tip. It says, I just wanted to share my nearly foolproof method for avoiding non-aquatic plants. Step one. Take the plants out of the tank or the tube. Many plants are sold in plastic cylindrical tubes. I guess most tubes are cylindrical. Why did I say that? Anyway.
Well, just because it's National Redundancy Day.
Yeah, it is,
and
really.
And repeating yourself.
Day two?
Yes.
Okay.
As
cool.
Well.
So these,
also.
He's saying these tubes are almost always a no-no anyway.
Now, why is the tube a no-no?
I have noticed, as Phil has pointed out, that many of those tubes are full of plants that aren't really good aquarium plants. They're great plants if you want to grow them in a terrarium
what is it about the tube? Why do they pack terrestrial plants in a tube?
I myself am often surprised at life's little quirks. I have no idea why. Except maybe they look pretty and they sell well. I don't know. But it's true that you can find some good plants in those tubes, like Java fern, like Anubias, but many of them are not very good. And so let's go on to step two. Step two is, does the plant stay upright? If it does, it's probably a bad one.
That's because if it were really a water plant, it wouldn't stand up by itself because it has to have the water making it stand up?
In general, yes. Now, there may be some sturdier plants like Anubias that can hold up to some extent in a tube like that, and then you let it go and it'll still hold up. That could be, but in general, that sounds like a great tip, so thank you, Phil. I like that. That's very helpful. I think that will save many a plant from suffering an early and unnecessary demise in an aquarium. And probably save a lot of aquarists from headaches, too. So, great tip, Phil. Let's look at what else he has. He said he lost his other Daphnia, his friend.
He had an accident with his roommate.
Well, it didn't say roommate, it says buddy.
But okay.
Yeah.
That was my assumption, sorry.
No, that's okay. His buddy was trying to be helpful and tossed it out on his plants.
I have to make my disclaimer before we go any farther.
Okay.
You can probably hear in my voice that I have a chest cold. So if you hear sawing, hacking, horrible, death-like, rattling noises in the background, that's me, and I apologize in advance.
Yes. We're sorry that you feel sick, and we hope it's over soon.
Continue. Now okay. I can cough without guilt.
Okay. So he tossed it out thinking it was just old, scuzzy, mosquito-ridden water, but he had actually just gotten that starter culture from the Minnesota Aquarium Society's meeting. And they had just gotten to a level where he was about to be able to feed them to this fish, and there it goes. You know, exactly the same thing happened to me once, not long ago, this summer, in fact.
Oh, who was that did that?
It was your mom.
My mom, oh yes. Dear.
She was visiting out from California, and there you go.
That's all right.
That's okay. The nice thing, though, she only dumped out about 3/4 of the bucket.
She didn't lose all of them.
So then the Daphnia were able to bounce back.
Well, you know, it just goes to show you, you gotta label everything. I don't know if he's his roommate or not, but you know, you have a roommate, you have to label your eggs and your milk and everything and all your food and your toilet paper. You have to label every little square of toilet paper or your roommates will use it all up!
And your Daphnia.
So
pictures.
Label your Daphnia.
Yep, that's what Phil mentions, that's yes. The lesson. And label your buckets.
No, you did something with the lids of our Daphnia cultures that make them look like they're there on purpose.
Right. I just cut out some triangles in the lid so they look kind of like one of those radiation signs a bit or something. And then
nobody will touch that.
Yeah, and then I put needlepoint canvas and attached it with zip ties. So people are less likely to get in there, but air and some light still gets in, and so the Daphnia do fine. But it keeps people from just dumping it out. So thanks again, Phil, for all those tips, and we will get you your Daphnia soon in the mail. Right, now let's move on to our next one.
It is now time once again to jump the pond and speak of the words of our dear friend Mick.
Yep, Mick in Carnforth. He said he loved the last show, and he also thinks the volume is slightly higher now, as he can hear the podcast well when he's working with his machinery, which he couldn't do before.
We don't know what kind of machinery Mick works with.
No, that's a bit mysterious, isn't it?
Terribly mysterious.
Well, thanks to Kevin in Connecticut for the levelator, because that's probably why it sounded better.
Yay!
So, Mick wanted to let us know that he has his three fire belly toes that he has, one of them has started singing.
Yay, singing toes!
He said it's making an oop, oop, oop noise.
Okay, can you say that again?
Oop, oop, oop.
What was that?
Oop, oop, oop.
Oop, oop, oop. Okay, this is just cute. Oop, oop, oop.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that coming from his toad. So can you record that, Nick, and send it to us? That would be cool. We could just put it right in the show.
Do that. Put it on the resources page, depending on when you get it in.
Because I don't know if my attempted automatopoeia is doing it justice. Frankly, so.
But you're very talented at automata. Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Now.
Okay. So what's going on?
Yes.
Is.
He's got this large green toad, and it's following around the small, stockier brown toads. So he believes these smaller, stockier brown toads are females.
Okay. Now I'm going to tell you what I think is going on.
Okay.
Okay. Is that the male toad, the green one, is wandering around attempting to be clumsy on purpose and drop things so he can say, oops, 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 because then the female thinks, oh, he's like a little lost puppy, he's so cute, I want to go hold his hand and help him. And so he's walking around, stumbling around the tank, following her behind, going, oop, 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 so that she can take pity on him and go out with him.
Well, he'll have to let us know how that goes.
It's just like Back to the Future.
Hi, I'm George. George McFly.
Like I'm that. Your density. Yes. Yeah,
who knows? Maybe it is. Well, I'm going to put on my Swami hat here, and is that what they're called? The people who tell the future? I think it is. And now I'm going to take out my upside-down fishbowl and predict the future of your toads. I predict that there are tadpoles in your future. Because every time go into a pet store, not every time, but many times when we have gone into the pet store and looked at the firebelly toads, we see in their enclosures tadpoles everywhere. And a lot of times the store clerks are quite unaware of it, so they're not even
attempting to breed them.
They're not even encouraging
the males to be clumsy.
So
they're just being clumsy all on their own.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll see your tank with some tadpoles in it, if that's what you want. That would be nice. We would love to hear about it and see pictures of it and hear.
Yes, and record it, because I want to hear the oop, oop, oop.
Kelly's pretty excited about that.
Like it. You know, okay, next time you want to go out on a date with me, you got to come at me with the oop, oop, oop.
Oop, oop, oop. Okay, I'll remember that. See how that goes. All right, well, he also says that he has done an interesting thing for the zoo. They have a season ticket to a small zoo just 5 miles from them. So recently he'd noticed they had a cherry shrimp tank set up, but it wasn't looking all that great. And so they got to talking to one of the keepers, and discussing that setup, he said that the keepers were disappointed with the small colony they'd gotten. So Mick has all kinds of red cherry shrimp, more than he knows what to do with. And so he suggested that he could bring them some, and so they were really pleased to accept it. The zoo was really pleased to accept about 30 of them that he gave them in good color. And so he's definitely doing something right if he can supply the zoo with good stock. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
I think that's pretty cool.
And Mick's also had an issue, not an issue, I should say. He's had some experimentation with garlic.
Garlic experimentation?
And with his fish.
See, he didn't inhale.
No, he's... He's been giving them desiccated garlic granules in with his Tetra Crisps.
I don't know if you can say desiccated garlic granules.
Well,
I almost can't say it. That's hard to get out. That's kind of a tang twister. See? I can't even say it.
I kind of like it. But he said
oop,
that
oop, oop.
garlic is becoming popular as a food supplement, so he thought he would give it a go. And none of his fish mind it, and some of the cichlids even go straight for the granules. They like them actively. And he said the only drawback is that the granules hydrate, and then it doesn't really cause a water problem, but there's a very strong odor of garlic in the fish room.
Hydrated garlic granules.
Yeah, see, there you go.
That's slightly easier to say.
Yeah, it is a little bit.
But and he said, less easy to smell. Or perhaps the problem is that it's more easy to smell.
It's easier to smell, but less pleasant, perhaps,
yes.
to smell. He says he has to vent it off by opening the door for a couple of hours every day. And so he's going to try to switch to a garlic flake and see how that goes.
But Mick, if you switch to the flake, I'm sure they will have some kind of odor control in it. And then if a coven of vampires suddenly breaks into your house and wants to suck you dry, you won't have any place safe to hide, so you might want to think about keeping the desiccated garlic granules.
You could market your fish room as a vampire safe house.
Yeah, and something.
I guess. No. I guess that was a little silly.
I'm sorry, have I mentioned that I have a cold and that I'm a little bit funky tonight?
But
I haven't even taken any cold medicine.
No,
let's
not give you any. Okay. He also, I should mention, there may be people out there wondering why he's giving garlic to his fish.
Oh, yes. Tell us the whys of garlic.
Well,
for they are great and
garlicky.
Extemporaneous?
No, they're not extemporaneous. The garlic can be an appetite stimulant. It's well known as an appetite stimulant for fish and is even used for catching game fish. They have garlic-flavored fish bait, you know, for that reason, because it's almost universal. I mean, I'm sure there are plenty of species that don't like it, but there are lots of species that do. I mean, among humans, of course, there are many people who like it, but fish and other species that like garlic.
Okay, maybe I should get some garlic for my cough.
Maybe you should, because it's also a general immunostimulant for fish as well as humans.
See?
And an antiparasitic.
I could pretend to be a fish even if it didn't work for humans, but it does work for humans.
Yeah, it does.
So
there are several good things about garlic.
There you go.
That's probably why Mick wants to use it. So there you go. And he also mentioned that he's got this, he picked up some Tetra Pro Crisp color. You know, with the color enhancers in it. And he's been giving it to his red cherry shrimp.
I have to tell you a thing.
Oh, go ahead.
Every time you say the word Tetra Pro Crisp, I picture Rice Krispies.
Do you really?
Yes. And so now I'm picturing colored Rice Krispies.
Okay.
I don't know why. Okay, continue. That was completely random.
Well, he said that it's intensified the red in his cherry shrimp. He usually feeds them Hikari crab cuisine pellets, but since they've been eating these color crisps, they've been really vibrant, and it's just been like 3 weeks, and
cool.
Wham, they're just popping. And that makes me want to give it a try, because I have a fascination with color-enhancing pigments, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially natural ones like the carotenoids that are in certain algaes and so on. I have fun with it, like to see what it does. Right now, I've been giving some brine shrimp at work. This spirulina is almost their sole diet, and they're green. They're like vivid green brine shrimp.
Nice.
They look like they're photosynthesizing or something.
Maybe they are.
It's kind of fun.
You got a mutant or something.
Because spirulina is full of natural carotenoid color enhancers, too. And, yeah, it's just fun to play with. So let us know how that goes, if there's anything else. He did like our newt joke last week, by the way. Well, not ours. It was Andreka's, but we were relaying it, and he liked it. He said it struck a chord with him, because, you know, he's got newts and stuff.
She has got a wart.
Let's see.
I think I said that already, though.
I think you may have.
That's okay.
So,
I don't have to be responsible for my comments tonight, right?
I hope not. So, we might as well go ahead and take a break right now. Shall we?
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
This isn't a commercial, because it's not trying to sell you anything. It is, however, the part where we shamelessly encourage you to be a part of the Aquarimax audio show by calling and leaving a message any time of the day or night at 801-477-0629. If you don't want to actually talk, but you do have a comment or question, you can just send us an email to info@aquarimax.com. There. That wasn't so painful now, was it?
All right, now we're back from the break, and We've talked to about Phil and about Mick and their comments and questions and so on.
And
so
frogs
now,
and Daphnia.
Yeah, some great stuff. And now we're going to talk about our own fairy and clam shrimp.
Yeah.
So fairy shrimp, not to be confused with cherry shrimp, even though it does rhyme. So let's talk about fairy shrimp for right now.
Okay. Why do we keep fairy shrimp?
Well,
one, because we like fairies.
We do.
And for some reason, when Russ was talking about fairy shrimp, I was picturing F-E-R-R-Y, and I don't know why, and I was trying to think, why would they name them that? But it's not. It's F-A-I-R-Y, as in flitting about.
Right. And this is why. They're called fairy shrimp, because of the sort of flitting motions
that they have.
They look kind of like animated feathers. They're very light.
They're a lot like brine shrimp.
Yeah, well, brine shrimp are actually a kind of fairy shrimp. Fairy shrimp is a larger group.
Fairy shrimp are a bigger group. Oh, see, yes. Look, this is brilliant. I learned so much on this show.
Fairy shrimp is a big group, and brine shrimp are the, saltwater, not marine, but saltwater variety and brackish water varieties of fairy shrimp.
Well, it's interesting since we have them both to watch some of the differences. Brine shrimp, to me, anyways, seem to be much more flexible.
Yeah.
Like, they're more serpentine in their motions, and the fairy shrimp are more stiff. It's almost like they don't bend what would be their backbone as much.
Right. It's not a backbone, of course.
It's not a backbone, but...
Right.
When you're looking at them...
Yeah, I see what you mean, and that's true. And we're talking about a specific species, of course. But before we get into that, because I do want to talk about that. We do want to talk about that, but I wanted to answer a little bit more of the question about why keep them.
I'm jumping ahead.
That's okay. It doesn't matter.
You don't give me a script, you take what you get, my friend.
So, they mainly just because they're interesting to watch. They're interesting to watch because you put a teaspoonful of dirt in a container and
dirt.
You pour some distilled water into
dirt.
It.
Dirt!
Yeah. It, for all appearances, it's dirt. And
what is it for not appearances?
Dirt with fairy shrimp eggs in it.
See, so you can't just go get a teaspoonful of dirt.
Well, it depends on where you get your dirt.
From your backyard.
No, not necessarily, no. But if you put a teaspoon of... It's detritus, which is dirt.
Dirt.
And it's got the shrimp eggs in it, and you put it in a container of distilled water and put some light on it, and boom, within 24 hours they hatch. And they grow extremely quickly. They grow faster than brine shrimp. And within a couple of weeks, they're big. And they get bigger than brine shrimp, too. We'll talk about that later. They do have some live food potential. There are people who are now marketing freshwater fairy shrimp eggs and freshwater fairy shrimp, I guess adults, as food. They're very popular in Thailand for that. There's a variety that grows there that they use.
I gotta say, I have a hard time when we feed the brine shrimp to the fish.
I know.
It's hard for me to watch.
It's not actually the easiest thing in the world for me either. The newly hatched ones, I don't really mind. But the adult ones, or even the sub-adults...
It's kind of...
It's not my favorite thing in the world to do.
Carnage and slaughter.
I know it's good for the fish, so I enjoy that aspect, but yeah. And the thing is, you don't need to use any salt with these guys, of course, which is interesting. So, besides the obvious that they are freshwater, there are other differences. We mentioned a couple of them. One of them, at least the variety we're keeping, which is known as the spiny tail or red tail fairy shrimp. It has a larger maximum size than brine shrimp. They get to be about an inch long. They have a red tail.
Like a forked tail.
A forked tail. Actually, brine shrimp have a forked tail, but you don't really notice because it's not very well colored. But... I guess the correct term would be caudal fursae.
Yeah, but really, who says caudal fursae on a daily basis?
Nobody does.
See?
So, yeah, but it's red. Well, it's kind of orangey red.
It's like a dark orange.
Yeah.
When they say red, it's like in the same way they call goldfish red. They're not red. They're orange.
But it's pretty vivid.
But, they call Russian blue cats blue, but they're gray.
Right.
I don't know. Color words are... weird with animals.
But it's cool that they have
it. It is still cool.
It's
stands
cool
out
an orange
pretty
tail.
Nicely. It stands out more as just they get bigger.
Yeah. And the males have really ornate antennae. you know, the claspers they use to mate with the females in the brine shrimp.
They have these two antlers.
But they look almost like ram's horns. They curl back over the head, and then they have these little extensions that go off the back that are folded along their back, so they're really long.
In fact, one of our sons came upstairs the other day. He's like, there's this bubble on one of the fairy shrimp.
Come see it. What's going on? And we came down, and it was just the antlers or claspers or whatever you want to call them. It's an interesting thing, too. Their mating habits are quite a bit different from brine shrimp. Because brine shrimp, a male comes up, clasps a female. If you're lucky, it's in the right place. And many times it's not. But
we'll
hold
guy.
There for a long time. Maybe hours, maybe even days.
They just kind of stay.
Yeah. These don't. These are interesting. These fairy shrimp. The male comes up behind the female and sort of hovers right above her for a minute to try to figure out where he's going. And then, most of the time, that's as far as he gets, and he doesn't continue. But sometimes he'll flick out the antenna. And so instead of grabbing on just like a brine shrimp does, he'll unfold the antenna and grab onto the female. And they mate for just a couple of seconds, and then he lets go.
It's very fast.
It's very fast. Very different. And so the way they swim, like you were saying, they sort of hover, and they don't seem as flexible as brine shrimp.
Yeah.
And brine shrimp, you know, they'll swim around and bump into something and just kind of hang there up against the wall or something and keep going. And it seems like they're stationary but stuck there. But fairy shrimp don't do that. They don't seem to do that. And they will be stationary in one spot, just out in the middle of the water.
Mm-hmm.
But it looks like they're hovering there on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an accident because they're bumping up against something. And they seem to have more gears. They have like this,
speed,
they're in
speed.
Neutral, yeah, when they're just sitting there. And then they can go really fast, like faster than brine shrimp and straighter, it seems like. And, you know, different things. So it's interesting to watch them. And I'm told, I have no direct experience with this yet, but I will soon, I think, that they have an obligate diapause.
Is that like desiccated garlic granules, things that you can't say?
No.
Say that phrase again.
Obligate diapause.
Ooh.
It just means that their eggs need to be in a resting phase, like they need to be dry.
Or they won't hatch at all?
Before they'll hatch, right. Brine shrimp have a facultative diapause in their life cycle.
You with your words.
Or it could be facultative, depending on how you want to accent that. But the idea
maybe
is...
Maybe depends on if you're from the Caribbean or the Caribbean.
There you go. But brine shrimp, they can give birth to live babies, or there's some people say that's what's happening, or they're just giving... They're releasing thin-shelled eggs that hatch shortly after being laid. And then the process continues. They don't need to dry out to do that. Or they can go the other route, and the eggs need to be dried out before they hatch. But, you know, these fairy shrimp can't do that. They just have, the eggs have to dry out. This species. There are other species of fairy shrimp that do it another way. I've even kept a species that was like more like brine shrimp and could give, the babies would hatch in the water and they were fine. You didn't have to dry them. But this kind you do.
Okay, well, what kind of tank setup do they need?
Well, it was really easy. Just put half a gallon of water in with the detritus that had the eggs in it.
The dirt.
Distilled water. And then put it under bright light for a couple hours. And then it hatched the next day. And
so
then
how much water did you say?
Half a gallon.
Half a gallon.
And then I just started topping it up with spring water a little bit at a time. And now it's got about 3 gallons in there. Of water, most of it's. I've
Do
also
you have
added
to wait
some dechlorinated
until after they
water.
Hatched?
To do what?
To put more water in.
Well, I started putting water in the next day, because they had hatched.
Okay.
Yes, and that's all. I haven't done any water changes because they don't really live long enough to have to worry about water changes. They just live a few weeks. They're about a month old now, and I think some of them are nearing the end of their lifespan. Some of them are going strong still. Once I found some mosquito larvae in the aquarium.
In the house?
Yeah. A mosquito
evil.
That had, you know...
Evil, vile...
Found it.
It's probably the one
because
that bit my face at night.
Maybe so. Because there's no aeration in the tank or anything. It's just there. That's all.
What did you do with the foul demon offspring?
I netted every last one of them out, and I fed them to the gourami and the CPDs and the rainbow fish. And I didn't feel any twinge of conscience about that at all. So,
we don't just have fairy shrimp, though.
No, in the package,
we have clam shrimp, which are really funky looking things. They don't look like shrimp and they don't look like clams.
Right. Well, they kind of look like clams because they have a shell.
About as much as they look like shrimp.
Oh, I don't know.
I think they look kind of like those black beetly things on, what's that Jim Henson Crystal movie?
The Dark Crystal.
The Dark Crystal.
Really?
Yeah. I think that's what they look
like. To me, they look sort of like giant, smoothly swimming Daphnia. Because you can see their digestive tract like you can with Daphnia, and you can see the area, the sort of saddle area where the eggs are and everything. Mm-hmm. But they swim more smoothly than Daphnia do, by a long shot. And there were two species in there. These all came in the same package with the fairy shrimp. One of them is kind of a classic clam shape, and it has the little concentric rings just like on the carapace, just like a clam shell, and it's the same shape as a clam shell, which is why they call them that. And the shell is kind of transparent. And there was that species that only lived about 3 weeks. Matured very, very quickly. Within a week and a half, they were already laying eggs and doing their thing. And then there's another species with a more elongate shell, which is more opaque. And some of those are still going and still producing eggs.
Were those the ones
eggs.
That were bigger or smaller?
Bigger.
Okay.
Bigger. And there's still some of those in there going. So they're very interesting creatures. I would say Kelly has mentioned that she prefers the fairy shrimp. And why is that? Mm-hmm.
Because the other ones look too much like bugs.
I
have come a long way in my appreciation of the insect kingdom, but...
That was an eloquent sigh.
They don't do it for me like the oop, 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 I'm sorry.
But anyway, the fairy shrimp and clam shrimp have been interesting creatures. The kids have gotten a kick out of watching them, and so have we. They've been fun. There's just something remarkable about putting a little bit of dirt in some water and the next day seeing them. I've actually had them at work with my students. I've been using them in a project. They've been doing research projects on vernal pool animals. And they found it very fascinating to see things change. And from last week to today, it's Monday when we're recording this, and there were some of the creatures that we're doing triops, we're doing the clam shrimp, we're doing fairy shrimp, and so on. And the immense difference in size from last week and today was enough to really surprise them a lot, because they do really grow visibly every day.
They do.
And that's
from
a fascinating thing to watch.
Even,
right.
Visibly.
That's very true. You can look in the morning and look in the evening and see a big difference. So it's been a lot of fun. And we're going to have a lot of eggs of those, so maybe we should do a giveaway of those sometime, because we're going to have plenty of them really soon. In fact,
you know what we should do sometime? We should do obscure paraphrased movie quotes during the podcast, as we are often wont to do, and the first person to tell us correctly what movie it's from, they get the eggs.
Wow.
Because wouldn't that have nothing to do with fish?
We'll have to see. That might be something we could do.
See, this is Russ being diplomatic for Kelly. Stop talking now.
No, that's not it at all. But I just wanted to point out something. I just wanted to point out something that right here in the 55-gallon next to us,
yes,
we've got another little rainbow fish fry.
Oh, look at that.
It's just fascinating to me to watch that one of them just crops up every once in a while and grows up, and I toss some micworms and Walter worms and so on in there for him, and he gets full and he eats them, and there is apparently enough infusoria in the tank that I don't need to supplement with that, but once he gets to the stage where he'll eat microworms and so on, he does fine. And that's how a lot of the fish in this tank have appeared. Well, several of them, probably half a dozen or so, have appeared just that way. So
pretty amazing.
I'm fascinated by the fact that that can happen, not to mention all the little bristle noses in there that are doing the same thing. It's just fun. So I think on that note, ladies and gentlemen, we shall sign off wishing you a very
fishy
week.
Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629. Or email us at info@aquarimax.com.